The following shiur has been presented by Rav Shmuel Binyamin Honigwax, Dayan at the Beis Havad, and has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
The center can be reached for dispute resolution and many other halachic services at 888-485-VAD or at thehalachacenter.org.
Tmura Daf Yud Ches. Our Gemara says halacha. The Gemara is darshan in the pasuk that Vasa Shama Vavesim Shama. The Gemara wants to know what's the pasuk trying to teach me. So Wamshan Rashi is that the Gemara says that's Afilu Mimargayu. Wamshan Rashi is that even though the behemoths are kachush, they're very skinny, they're trying to fatten up a little bit in the fields. Nevertheless, Yom Tov comes. You quickly take your animal, you bring it to Beis Hamikdash, and you mekayim your nether. So the Marsham brings a raya from this Gemara to a very famous question. There was a Chuvan, the Radvaz, about somebody who's stuck in jail, unfortunately, Rahman al-Tzlan, and they give him a chance to go out once a year. And his question is, should I go out on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur to hear to Mekayimitzes Tekiyas Shofar, or that kind of thing? Or should I go out to go to Minyan on the first possible opportunity? So the question is, what takes precedence? Is it more important to be Mekayim the mitzvah that's in front of you right now? Or should I wait to be Mekayim a bigger mitzvah later on? So Radvaz says that the best thing to do is to go out right now. Go out right now, mitzvah bal yad al tach mitzena, imapirin al mitzvahs. You have a mitzvah in front of you right now, do the mitzvah right now. The Chacham Tzvi argues on it. The Ktzayis HaChoyshin, Marsham brings a raya from our Gemara to Radvaz, because our Gemara is saying that let's say a person was mekabel on himself, a chiyuv, to go ahead and bring a carbon, or if he has a vodis kodshim or something like that, and he has to bring it as a carbon, and you have a question, should I bring it right now, even though the animal is very, very skinny, and it's not as healthy and as bakavadik to bring a carbon, like Hevel brought, mebuchayr's tzaynu with halveyim, the most healthy carbonis, or mechuyiv to bring memyuchat sheba edroi, the best possible carbon. So should I bring it now, or should I wait until it fattens up? And the pasuk teaches us, bring it right now, you have to bring it now. It comes out that the pasuk is telling us that the answer to this question, if you have two mitzvahs, you have two opportunities, one is to be mekayim the mitzvah right now, and one is to wait for later to be mekayim the mitzvah with a bigger hiddur. Now, halacha is, you should do the mitzvah that's in front of you right now. Ktzais brings down this conversation in relationship to a very important question in Chayshe Mishpat. Frequently, unfortunately, people are in a hard financial situation. They borrow a lot of money, and they end up in debt. They owe a lot of people money. And various creditors are coming and knocking on their door, and they call them to Beis Din. And Beis Din is faced with a situation. A guy comes and says, Reuven comes and says, Shimon owes me $100,000. So Beis Din says, okay, Shimon, do you have $100,000? Okay, I don't have $100,000, I have $80,000. Okay, gewaldig. Reuven is happy, he's getting 8 cents on his dollar. Shimon says, hey, wait a minute, I owe another 20 people money. If you go and say, the halacha is that by metaltalin, if there's no shibud karkois, there's no kedima. The Baal Chayv who lent money earlier has no right to collect money earlier. So if all these Baal Chayvs would be in front of us, we would split up the money and say that each Baal Chayv gets an equal amount. It doesn't even matter who lent more money, who lent less money. As long as each Baal Chayv is not paid up yet, they all have equal rights to the money. So Shimon says, why should I pay the money to Reuven just because he came to Beis Din first? So Yosef brings down a Tshuvas Maimoni, who says that the dayan cannot force the borrower to pay to one of the people right away, and the dayan who makes him pay to the first guy who comes is not doing the right thing. And the Beis Yosef questions this, that why should this be? Is it possible that if one of the creditors goes away and is overseas, that everybody else should not be able to collect money? It's impossible to say that. So he says, no, if there's one guy who comes to Beis Din and asks for the money, that's the guy that you pay the money to. The Bach says, no. You're right, the Beis Yosef has a good taina, that it's not possible that if one of them goes to overseas that nobody should be able to collect money. But that's not the conclusion that you would read, that you would reach if you follow the Chuvas Maimony. What you would say is that Beis Din would split up the money according to a known number of creditors, according to the number of creditors that we know about, and give everybody who's here their share, and the guy who's overseas will keep his share and hold it for him for when he comes back. So the Ktzois tries to explain the sheet of the Beis Yosef. What's the rationale behind the Beis Yosef's position? Says the Ktzois as follows. Since the halacha is that there's no shibud by metalkali, when a person lends another person money and the borrower doesn't have any karkois that could have a lien placed on them, all he has is metalkali, moist, and the money in the bank or other things, and nowadays even karka, if you didn't register a lien, it would not be considered to have a shibud. possibly. So the halacha is no shibud. So why do you have to pay? Zaktik tzais. The reason why you have to pay is because priyas balchayv mitzvah is a mitzvah to pay back money that you borrowed. And that's what the Gemara says in the end of Bava Basra. The reason why you have to pay back money if you hold is no shibud, shibud lav derais, is because priyas balchayv mitzvah. Says the tzais that according to what we just learned, that if a person has two mitzvahs in front of him, he has a mitzvah to do now, and he has a mitzvah that to do later. Halacha is, you have to do the mitzvah that's in front of you right now, says the Ktzois. So the Ktzois first says, he says even more than that. He says, the Baal Chayv who's Teveah you, that person's mitzvah exists because he's being Teveah. The other person who's not being Teveah, there's no mitzvah at all. So therefore, since the only reason you have to pay is because Priyas Baal Chayv mitzvah, the only one you have to pay to right now is the person who's standing in front of you. And he says, certainly according to this, Radvaz, who holds that even if there's a bigger mitzvah later, but you have to do a mitzvah that's in front of you, because Eimah Pirin Al Mitzvah, certainly if a person is standing in Mim Teveyu, there's a mitzvah right now to be Mekayim, so there's no question that you would have to, according to Beis Yosef, that's a pshat in the Beis Yosef, you would have to give the money to the person who's being Teveyu now. So the Ktzois tries to make peace between the various shittos over here. He says, if everybody was already Teveya, the borrower, if everybody already demanded their money back, and it's just that they didn't have a chance to call him to Beis Din, or they're not in front of Beis Din, but they asked him for the money back, so then he has a mitzvah to pay everybody. And then the Bach and the Chuvas Maimony are right, that you would split up the money and give each person their share. And the person who's not in Beis Din, you would hold a share for him for when he comes. However, the Beis Yosef was talking about a case where the other people had never yet asked the borrower for his money, and therefore, their mitzvah doesn't exist yet, their mitzvah may exist later, but the Allah has mitzvah baliyot chal tach mitzvah. So even though we know that tomorrow we'll have a mitzvah when the guy comes from Dina Sayyam and his Teveya, nevertheless, today the only mitzvah that we have in front of us is to pay back to the lenders who actually are standing in front of us and being Teveya. So I'm going to say over a din Torah that we had that's relevant to this halacha of the Ktzois that just came up, and I'm actually right in the middle of it right now as we speak. And there's a lot of very, very interesting questions that came up in the course of this din Torah. Basically, there was a person, we'll call him Reuven, who had a business that was successful. He was making a lot of money. And he tried to buy out a partner. So he needed capital in order to buy out a partner. So he sold some shares of his business to somebody else for a lot of money. Now he had some money to buy out a partner. He also took out loans from this individual and from another individual. There are basically two people, three people. There's Reuven, the original owner of the business. Then there's Shimon and Levi, who are coming in and buying shares of his business and also lending him money on a heter iska in order to help him to buy out his original partner, which he wanted to do for some reason, some kind of convoluted reason. I have no clue. I've been trying to figure out this reason for years, but I was not able to figure out why he wanted to get rid of that good partner and get these partners who are now breathing down his back. Whatever it is, he is, I guess, sort of managed to buy out that partner. Now he has these other partners, Shimon and Levi, who own shares in his business, and they also lent him money b'heter iska. So, as the years, 1 or 2 years passed by, this Reuven fell on very, very hard times financially. his business lost a lot of money. Part of the reason was because of mismanagement. Another reason is because he was moving into a new location and trying to renovate a new building, so a lot of money was spent on that. He neglected his business, so he lost money because of the fact that he was distracted and not taking care of his business in the proper way. Also, when he moved into his new building, he got closed down by the township. So he lost a massive amount of money because of all these problems that he had. After this whole episode, the lenders and the partners called him to the entire. They want their money back. They want money back. They want to know what their shares are. And Reuven is basically being bailed out by a close relative of his who's willing to come in and save his business. But he's making certain conditions with the partners and the lenders, and their question was, what is their position in Din Torah, vis-a-vis Reuven, and what are their rights as far as either stopping this deal or having greater leverage and allowing the deal? What's their negotiating position when it comes to this relative who's coming in to bail out Reuven? What power do they have, to negotiate with that relative? So there are many, many different aspects to this question. I'll speak today about one of the aspects. Let's call him Shimon, lent money to Reuven with a heter iska. Now, Shimon negotiated a very high interest rate for the heter iska. Shimon is the hard money lender. He's the hardest of hard money lenders. He lends to people who other people wouldn't touch. And he was able to negotiate because of that a very high interest rate. Now he had a number of heteriskas. The first heteriska was that the interest of the heteriska would be composed of transfers of shares. In other words, he would lend a certain amount of money, $100,000, and instead of paying interest on that $100,000, the borrower would have to transfer small amounts of the company to him every month. That was one heteriska. Then he wrote another heteriska, where he had a bunch of components of the ribbis. One was a money amount. The second one was to take responsibility to pay the profit of his shares in the company. In other words, even if there wasn't profit, he has responsibility to pay the profit anyways. That was another component of the ribbis of the Hatariska. And the third component of the ribbis of the Hatariska was to bring up his shares by a certain amount. Now, sometimes in a Hatariska, The structure of heteriska, I've spoken about a number of times before, but I'll just summarize quickly. The basic structure of heteriska is that, obviously, a Jew can't charge interest to another Jew. Basically, the way it works is it's an investment, and the recipient, the person who's getting the money and supposed to be investing it on behalf of the investor, is obligated to prove or to swear about whether or not there were profits, and because he doesn't want to do that, he pays interest to buy himself out of that obligation to swear. That's a simpler understanding. There may be some nuances in this way of understanding, but that's the basic structure. Now, some heteriskas will say that if a month goes by without notification on the part of the recipient to the investor regarding whether or not there have been profits or whether or not he wants to swear about the profits, that will be an admission, will be hoidas baldin, that there were profits in the amount of the heteriska. Other heteriskas don't have that. So in this case, the first heteriska, which gave the investor shares, did not have that thing. The second heteriska, which was written basically on top of that first heteriska, and was supposed to renegotiate the terms of that first heteriska, said that there was an admission in the second one. But the second one had a tnai. There was a condition. It said, if you don't fulfill certain conditions, then the terms revert to the first heteriska. The terms of the first heteriska that were more disadvantageous to the borrower than the terms of the second heteriska. At least in the eyes of the borrower. So the borrower didn't want to be stuck with the first one. So the second one said, if you don't keep the conditions in the second one, certain conditions, then we're going to go back to the terms of the first heteriska. So now these two heteriskas are being presented in front of Beis Din, and the lender wants to collect based on these heteriskas. Now, we look at these heteriskas, we say like this. This guy, this borrower, we know that he probably, in all likelihood, did not make very much money. In fact, he lost tons of money the past few years. Now, there's a question, what do we do with such a heteriska? Like we said, the halacha is the reason why the borrower is allowed to pay interest is because of the fact that he would otherwise be obligated to swear regarding whether or not there were prophets. Now, in a case where we all know that there weren't any prophets, it's very hard to take the position that Bezdin would force the borrower to swear. Therefore, one could argue that it's very difficult to collect ribbis on such an interest, because since there's no real rationale for making the borrower swear, because everybody knows he lost money, it might make sense to say that you don't have the opportunity to collect interest. However, Moshe writes in a tshuva that I did not see this inside. I heard this from my Rebbe Shlomo Miller Shlita, that Moshe writes in the tshuva that no, the lender has the right to ask for a shvua. Even though it's pretty obvious and pretty well known that the borrower is not making money, nevertheless, you could say, I'm not 100% sure. Maybe you're making money and hiding it somehow. Maybe you're squirreling away funds somewhere. I don't know, all your bank accounts. So I can ask for a shvua, regardless of whether or not it's generally accepted by people that this borrower is not making any money. That's what Ramosh writes. So if so, it sounds like there would be grounds for ribbis in this case. However, the question is, how much ribbis could we charge? Okay, we said that the lender is the hardest of the hard. He charges the highest of the high. He takes the maximum amount of interest way higher than anybody else is allowed to charge. Why? The rationale over here was because it's a great business, an amazing business. The business is making tons of money. That rationale doesn't exist anymore. We can't say the business is making tons of money. If we tell other lenders that you can't lend at higher than 16%, let's say, there was a sign up from the Gedolim about exactly what you're allowed to charge. Okay, 16%, 20%, 24%, whatever it is. In this case, it was way higher than that. So, to allow the lender to charge such a high ribbis was only based on these crazy projections that the borrower was giving of his business. But in a case where we know that business, that specifically high yield business, was not doing well, so you want to say, okay, maybe he was making money somewhere else, maybe he's hiding, is squirreling away money, we can't make it worse than a regular guy, we can't charge him such high interest. And the svara to all this is as follows, that okay, you can ask for a shvua. You can say, I insist that he swears. I don't trust him that he's not making money. But let's say we didn't have a hetariska. And you had two partners. The halacha is that each partner has to swear if the other partner asks for him. Now let's say one partner says, I don't want to swear. I'm from a Yid. I'm a religious Jew. I don't want to swear. So what's Bezdin going to do? Is Bezdin going to make him pay $100 million because that's what the other partner is asking him for? L'chaira, Bezdin will not do that. Bezdin will say, what's the greatest possible amount that we, Bezdin, can imagine in our wildest dreams that this guy is making? So you say, let's say he's making $100,000, $200,000, okay, $1 million. So he's chayiv a shvua to say he's not making $1 million. Now he doesn't want to make a shvua. He doesn't want to swear. So we say, okay, the halacha is that generally Bezdin makes a pshar on a shvua. Bezdin says that if you're mechuyiv a shvua, if you're obligated to swear, and you don't want to swear, so we say, okay, pay a third of the amount of money that the guy's asking from you. That's the shear that the achroinim give, which is a good pshar. A third. If a person's chayiv a shvua, you pay a third if you don't want to swear. Okay, so in this case, Bezdin's chayiv, you're making $1 million, so Bezdin will say, pay $333,000 and $333,000, 333 and 33 cents, and a third of a cent. That's what Bezdin would say. Because Bezdin likes to give psakim in decimals and all kinds of crazy numbers. But the point being that even if we'll accept what Ramesh is saying, that regardless of what people know about the financial situation of the borrower, nevertheless, the lender can ask for a shvua. Okay, the lender can ask for a shvua. He can be entitled to a shvua, 100%. But the borrower is saying, I don't want to swear. And I don't either want to make the pshara of the heter iska, I want to make a different pshara. So what's stopping Bezdin from giving the borrower a different pshara, just like we would give him a different pshara if he never had a heter iska in the first place? So therefore, even though the terms of the first heter iska, getting back to our case, the terms of the first heter iska may have been worse for the borrower, but now it's the lender's advantage to keep and hold on to the terms of the second heter iska. Why? Because in this case, the second heter iska had a hoidas baldin. So even though at some point after a number of months the lender came over to the borrower, the borrower came over to the lender and said, you should know I'm not making any money, so at that point the hoidas baldin stops, but at least up to that point the lender was entitled to collect even high interest. Why? Because that high interest is not being supported at this point by a chiyuv shvua. That high interest is being supported at this point by Hoidas Baldin. The reason why the lender can collect that interest is because the borrower already admitted by not saying anything that he had actually been earning all that money. So Bezin doesn't have to say, okay, right now you have a Chiyuv Shvua, and we'll figure out what to do about that Chiyuv Shvua, because that Chiyuv Shvua is already irrelevant. The point is, once that first month passed, and the borrower didn't come over to the lender and say, you should know I wasn't making any money, the borrower was considered to have admitted in Bezin that he was making that money, and the reason he is admitting that, obviously, is because at that point he did have a Chiyuv Shvua. So at that point he had a Chiyuv Shvua, he didn't want to swear, so he came and admitted in Bezin that. He didn't actually admit, but we consider him to have admitted in Bezdin that he actually did make that money, and therefore, that money at least is safe for the lender. But whereas if the lender went back and reverted to the terms of the first Heter Iska, the lender would lose even that protection, and then the lender would be left very, very sad.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To reach the center for halacha consultation, service, educational seminars, or media, please call 1-888-485-VAAD. That's 1-888-485-8223. To sign up to the BHHJ, the Beis Havad's weekly interactive e-journal, please visit www.bhhj.org, or you can email us at office@thehalachacenter.org.